The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be presenting the latest vision news. Today's vision news is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. First up from AARP Bulletin, September 2024, under Your Money, page 20, Congress has reduced our staff to a 25-year low. Social Security Chief Martin O'Malley explains how he's trying to turn the struggling agency around. Interview by Andy Markowitz. With the Social Security Administration under fire from retirees, Congress and advocacy groups, including AARP SSA Commissioner Martin O'Malley, has no easy job. Sworn in last December for an abbreviated term that expires in January, the former governor of Maryland might have only a short amount of time to address the agency's deteriorating customer service. In this interview with AARP, O'Malley talks about the challenges the SSA faces and what he believes is the key to its long-term success. Two customer service priorities that you've identified are long wait times on Social Security's 800 number and growing wait times for people making disability claims. Where are you in fixing these? At the end of last year, when I was confirmed, the average wait time on the 800 number was 41.2 minutes. We've wrestled that bad boy down to on a rolling 30-day average to 17.8 minutes. Depending on when you call, some people will get longer wait times, some people shorter. We've installed a callback assist. Rather than wait on hold, callers can leave their number, so an SSA representative, when available, can call them back. It's also important to communicate honestly and clearly with our customers about what their expectations should be, so that they don't feel like they have to call the 800 number because they were told to expect something within 2 weeks, when the reality is it would take 40 days. What about disability claims? Probably the biggest fire-breathing dagger we confront right now is the growing number of people applying for disability determinations. There's a huge backlog. In 2023, according to our actuary, we had 30,000 people dying as they awaited their initial disability determination. We're doing a couple of things on that front. One is better use of technology to identify early those cases that are very likely going to be allowable cases. The other thing is to expand the use of technology so that the people making those initial disability determinations can more quickly get to the heart of the medical record instead of flipping through 1,000 pages. Having callback assist and rolling out video appointments, which you've recently announced, are things organizations with large customer bases have been doing for a long time. Why was the SSA so slow to adopt some of these changes? The context of everything we struggle with here and now is the truth is that we are serving more customers than ever because of us baby boomers. And Congress has reduced our staff to a 25-year low. I don't think it was intentional. I think it was inattention. We can't get enough people on the phones to answer as quickly as we used to. So everything with which we struggle, the largest part of that context is the reduction in staffing coupled with the great increase in beneficiaries. You've come out of hiring freeze that the SSA was under when you took office. How many people have you been able to hire, and where have you been able to deploy them? We're now going to be able to hire approximately another 1,200 people. We are going to be deploying them to a few primary areas. One is the 800 number so people can get their calls answered in a more timely fashion. The second is the field offices so people get their appointments and their applications in. The third is the actual processing of those applications. The fourth is the disability determination offices, which the federal government pays for but the states run. That is where our largest backlog is right now. That time period for decisions on disability claims used to average 120 days when Congress allowed us to operate on our 1.2% overhead. That 120 days has now ballooned to 228 days. In some states, it's even larger. That's unacceptable, and that's our biggest challenge right now. The number of applicants is going to continue to grow, but the rate of attrition in all of those 50 state disability determination offices, we have been scrambling to try to backfill against what is one of the worst attrition rates anywhere in any department funded by the federal government. And unless Congress pulls us out of this downward spiral, we're going to have fewer and fewer staff to deal with those claims. Skipping over the question about overhead, I want to pivot to the other Social Security issue that's on everybody's mind. Absent action by Congress, in a decade or so, the Social Security trust funds are going to run short of their reserves, and benefits are going to be cut by 17%. That's a circumstance nobody wants, but Congress hasn't done anything to address it yet. What is your view of some of the proposals that are on the table? As the administrator of Social Security, my job is not to propose policy, but to give members of Congress and the President the numbers accurately that the actuary produces for Social Security so that they can make the right call. Now, when I ran for president in 2016, my proposal to strengthen Social Security for the foreseeable future was to ask people who earned a lot more to pay again into Social Security. President Biden has proposed asking those that make more than $400,000 a year to start paying into FICA, into Social Security, again, once they reach that $400,000. Editors note, in 2024, taxes under the Federal Insurance Contributions Act are collected only on wage income up to $168,600. The President and some members of Congress proposed applying the payroll tax to income above $400,000. Other members of Congress propose other things. There are some who say that you should raise the retirement age, but there are others who push back on that and say, wait a minute, people that work harder, more physically demanding jobs have a much lower life expectancy and might not even reach the age where they could claim benefits. I just came back from South Dakota. I was on the Pine Ridge Reservation there. You know what the average life expectancy is in Pine Ridge? 48 years for men, 52 years for women. There will be a lot of policies out there. The good news is that in the past, whenever we faced events like this, Congress came together and figured out what they thought was their best fix for the foreseeable 75 years, which is a long time. When I was a younger man in college, we used to always say, I wonder if Social Security will even be there for me when I'm 62. Hey, guess what? I'm 62 and I'm still here. As long as Americans work, Social Security will continue to pay benefits. That's the elegant simplicity of the system. This interview has been edited for length and clarity. From AARP the magazine, October-November 2024, page 49. Diabetes breakthrough: small and easy insulin pumps for type 2 diabetes. When Tanya Crutchfield went swimming in the scenic Buffalo River in Arkansas in June, she wore an insulin pump smaller than a deck of cards under her bathing suit. Nobody could see it, says Crutchfield, 54, who has had type 2 diabetes since her 30s. I don't have to carry needles and insulin or find a private place to give myself a shot. Like about 1 in 4 of the roughly 35 million Americans with type 2 diabetes, Crutchfield uses insulin to help control her blood sugar. Giving herself 4 shots a day required pricking her finger for a blood sugar check, calculating her next insulin dose, filling a syringe, and injecting herself. Sometimes Crutchfield did it in her car or a bathroom stall, but too often she skipped it, especially if she was busy or simply couldn't tote her insulin around in a cooler bag to keep it cold. I hated the shots, she says. As a result, her blood sugar was often sky high, boosting her risk for eye problems, nerve damage, and kidney trouble. At her doctor's suggestion, in late 2023, she tried VGO, V-G-O, an insulin patch pump specifically designed and FDA approved for people with type 2 diabetes. The disposable device attaches to her skin with adhesive and contains a day's worth of insulin delivered continuously through a tiny needle into her skin. Before meals, she can adjust the dosage so it can handle blood sugar increases from any carbohydrates, such as bread, pasta, rice, fruit, or dessert. She's about to eat. My sugars have been fantastic, she says. Crutchfield's A1C, a measure of blood sugar control over 2 to 3 months, fell from a dangerously high 13% to below 7%, the goal for most people with diabetes, according to the American Diabetes Association. Patch pumps have been around for nearly 20 years, but they were traditionally used by people with type 1 diabetes. Now several patch pumps for type 2 are on the market, and more are in development. If you can get your A1C down and stable, it can reduce risk for complications of diabetes, especially for the eyes, kidneys, and nerves, said endocrinologist Xunzhong Bo, MD of CHI St. Vincent's Little Rock Diagnostic Clinic, who treats Crutchfield's diabetes. Stable, controlled blood sugar also reduces cardiovascular risks. Patch pumps are small, easy to use, and waterproof, although the insulin dose often can't be as finely calibrated as with a traditional insulin pump. And with a pump, you still have to test your blood sugar four times a day, though newer continuous glucose monitors that send the data right into your phone make that simpler. Living with diabetes is not easy, Bao notes. These patch pumps can be really helpful. There are sidebars, diabetes briefs, spinal cord stimulation for diabetic neuropathy. Implanted spinal cord stimulation systems from four companies gained FDA approval in 2022 and 2023 for easing the pain of a type of nerve damage called diabetic peripheral neuropathy. In a 2023 study of 216 people with this painful condition, 76% of those who received mild electrical signals applied to the spine reported their pain improved by 50% or more after 6 months. FootMat detects early foot ulcers. An FDA-cleared FootMat senses temperature changes in the soles of the feet, a warning sign of increased risk for foot ulcers, infection, and even amputation. Used daily for 20 seconds, SmartMat from Podometrics scans feet for temperature changes. In a 2020 study, device users had fewer foot ulcers. Another sidebar, tackle type 2 diabetes aggressively. If your blood sugar is really out of control, beta cells in your pancreas that produce insulin can die faster, says Bao. Getting blood sugar down can preserve beta cell function. Or if your blood sugar has been high for many years, you may have a severe insulin deficiency. Newer diabetes drugs may reduce or eliminate the need for insulin in type 2 diabetes, but for now, it's a good tool for controlling blood sugar. From Reader's Digest, November 2024, Why Our Bodies Don't Dig Daylight Saving Time. Twice a year, when we spring ahead and fall back, we're more prone to sleepiness, depression, and accidents. Article by Teresa Carr, C-A-R-R, page 54. Skipping ahead to page 57, scientists generally advocate for permanent standard time, or natural time, as some people call it, because it better aligns people's schedules with the sun year-round. People who study the issue are all in agreement, Gentry says. On the other hand, public opinion tends to favor permanent DST, and many politicians agree, perhaps because of the positive associations with summer sunshine. A bill to make that switch passed the U.S. Senate unanimously in 2022, but then stalled in the House, and a new version was recently reintroduced. Some scientists have fired back that such a move would be a grave mistake. The German newspaper Die Welt quoted pioneering chronobiologist and sleep researcher Till Renneberg, R-O-E-N-N-E-B-E-R-G, warning that permanent daylight standard daylight savings time would make Europeans dicker, dümmer, and grattinger, fatter, dumber, and grumpier. The conflict over DST versus ST makes for grabby headlines, but the research reveals uncertainties not only about the effects of changing the clocks, but also about other factors, such as how structuring our schedules around light and darkness could have a profound impact on our health and safety. The 24-hour cycle of light and dark created by the Earth's rotation is the force that rules our lives. Homer's rosy-fingered dawn is what chronobiologists call a Zeitberger, German for time giver, a natural signal that touches off cyclical processes in the body governing our internal clocks. Morning light, for example, cues our bodies to ramp up production of cortisol, a hormone that helps us feel awake and alert. Meanwhile, as cortisol dwindles through the evening, darkness triggers the sleep-promoting hormone melatonin. In the language of chronobiologists, the biological clock rhythms of humans and other animals are entrained, or determined, by the solar clock. Humans have devised schemes such as time zones and daylight saving time to optimize their interactions with these natural cycles of light and dark, but the match between time policy and the Zeitgebers is often imperfect. Zeitgebers, Z-E-I-T-G-E-B-E-R-S. When we set clocks forward with DST in the spring, many people suddenly have to get up for school or work before the light has jump-started physiological processes associated with wakefulness. Cortisol levels peak about an hour later during DST, according to a 2014 Australian study. Then at the other end of the day, people may have to go to bed before hours of darkness have signaled to their body that it's time to sleep. The abrupt change, especially to DST in the spring, can wreak havoc on our health and safety. In a 2020 commentary for JAMA Neurology, Beth Mallow and colleagues in the sleep division at Vanderbilt University Medical Center outlined evidence of negative health effects during DST transition, including less and poorer quality sleep, an increased risk of stroke and heart attack, and a decreased sense of well-being, particularly for men who work full-time. In addition, although the research on road safety is mixed, some studies find an uptick in traffic accidents and fatalities in the days after the DST switch. However, those bad effects are fleeting. The longer-term impact of DST is hard to research because the amount of sunlight changes with the seasons. Only one study has directly compared permanent DST to permanent ST. A 7-year study of students ages 10 to 24 living in northwestern Russia. When the government mandated a switch from seasonal DST to year-round DST in 2011, and then switched again to permanent ST in 2014. Permanent DST meant that the sun rose and set later in the winter. Results published in 2017 associated year-round DST with a greater likelihood of feeling down in the winter, as well as sleeping later on the weekends, a phenomenon known as social jet lag. Chronobiologist Ronenberg and colleagues coined the term nearly 2 decades ago to describe the chronic sleep deprivation that people experience when they have to get up for school or work before they would awaken naturally. Social jet lag is the umbrella term for not being able to live in sync with one's biological time, says Ronenberg. It's an artifact of our modern world. Nearly half of American adults sleep at least an hour later when they have the chance, according to a study published in JAMA Network Open in 2022. Others have associated social jet lag and the sleep deprivation it reflects with smoking and consuming higher amounts of alcohol and caffeine, as well as a range of ill health effects, including obesity, metabolic syndrome, a group of health conditions that increase the risk of heart disease, stroke, and type 2 diabetes, and depression. Studies have also linked social jet lag to worse academic performance for high school and college students. In a thorough review, Ronenberg and colleagues argue that by pushing sunrise and sunset an hour later, permanent DST is bound to worsen social jet lag. But the Russian study is the only direct evidence of that link, and it's uncertain whether those effects, which the Russian researchers characterize as small or very small, apply to older age groups or people living where the cycles of light and dark are less extreme. In Vorkuta, one of three cities in the study, for example, the sun never rises for 10 days in the winter and never sets for 6 weeks in the summer. Polls show that we generally dislike mucking with time twice a year. Nearly 2/3 of Americans say they want to eliminate the changing of clocks, according to a nationally representative survey of 1,500 U.S. adults conducted by The Economist magazine and market research company YouGov in 2021. Permanent DST enjoys bipartisan support among many political leaders in the United States. In a document supporting the Sunshine Protection Act, Senator Marco Rubio, Republican Florida, cites evidence that DST promotes health, safety, recreation, commerce, and energy savings. However, some of that research focuses on the harms of switching back and forth, so one could also use it to support year-round ST. A 2020 report from the Congressional Research Service prepared for members of the U.S. Congress did not find substantial evidence that DST improves health and safety, or that it reduces energy consumption by much, if at all. On the other hand, the nonprofit organization Save Standard Time lists endorsements from more than 30 sleep science and medical organizations, including the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, the American Medical Association, and the American Academy of Neurology, among others, in addition to individual scientists and researchers. The last time we tried permanent DST, it didn't go well. In an attempt to conserve energy, Congress established a trial period of a year-round DST in late 1973. The public approval dropped precipitously as Americans faced the reality of dark winter mornings. By October 1974, the country had reverted to 4 months of yearly ST. The disconnect between the perception and the reality arises because of how we think and talk about the seasons and time changes, says Malo, who testified before Congress about the benefits of permanent ST. People have associated being on standard time with it being cold and winter and dark, she says. Meanwhile, springing forward coincides with the return of warmer, longer days. But of course, DST doesn't buy you more light. Winter days are short and summer days are long, regardless of how you mark time. The focus on issues like DST and time zones, some researchers say, can overlook another key part of the time policy puzzle. In our artificially lit world, our internal clocks are affected by far more than sunrise and sunset. No doubt the sun is the strongest Zeitgeber, but artificial light also affects our internal clocks, says sleep researchers Jörg-Jan Dijk, D-I-J-K. He dismisses the notion that humans are entrained solely to the sun as a romantic idea. We, to a large extent, have divorced our activity schedules from natural light-dark cycle, he says. A body of research shows that even dim light can suppress our melatonin production and delay sleep. Blue light from fluorescent lights and our ubiquitous screens, which has the shortest wavelength and the highest energy of light that the human eye can see, has a particularly powerful effect on circadian rhythms. Too much blue light at night can lead to problems with sleep, concentration, and mood, and a heightened risk of cancer, depression, and diabetes. Dijk has frustrated that a focus on DST overlooks harder questions about the built environment and how we choose to live and work. The more general question is, how the heck do we actually come up with our work schedules and social schedules, which basically determine to what extent we make use of natural light versus man-made light, he says. Because there's no question that aligning our sleep and work schedules with the light that is available for free would ultimately be better for us. Adapted from undark.org, March 11, 2024. From Reader's Digest Health, October 2024, shots, shots, shots for everybody. Are you up to date on your vaccines? Our handy guide will let you know. Article by Beth Weinhouse, W-E-I-N-H-O-U-S-E, from thehealthy.com. What was the most important medical discovery of all time? Was it antibiotics, which gave doctors a way to fight deadly infections? What about medical imaging, such as x-rays and CT scans, which allow doctors to look inside the human body to diagnose and treat a variety of conditions? Both of these innovations, of course, have saved many lives, but there's one that leaves them in the dust. According to the World Health Organization, vaccines have saved more human lives, 154 million, including 101 million infants, in the last 50 years alone, than any other medical invention in history. The first successful human vaccine was the smallpox vaccine developed in 1796. Smallpox used to kill millions of people each year, and the vaccine has saved many millions of lives. We no longer need a smallpox vaccine because that disease was successfully eradicated thanks to the vaccine. So far, smallpox is the only infectious human disease we've succeeded in making disappear completely. There are still plenty of viruses and bacteria circulating that are a threat to our health, but fortunately we have vaccines that can protect against many of them. This fall, as you think about getting a flu vaccine, do it. Also, think about whether there are other vaccines that you should consider getting to keep yourself healthy. Many people follow the recommended vaccine schedule through childhood, but then stop keeping up with boosters and new vaccines once they're adults. The list at right includes vaccines that are recommended for most adults age 19 and older by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, as well as many other reputable medical organizations. You might need vaccines earlier or more often than the regular schedule if you have conditions that affect immunity, such as HIV infection, or if you take immunosuppressant drugs after an organ transplant, cancer, or illnesses such as vasculitis, for example. Or you might need other vaccines in addition to those listed, depending on risk factors such as your age, overall health, immune status, lifestyle, and even travel plans. For instance, typhoid vaccine is not typically given to people living in the United States, but for those traveling to a country where typhoid is common, the vaccine can provide protection. On the flip side, if you were born before a certain year, you likely have developed immunity to certain diseases and can skip those shots. Take a look at the list to see if you've fallen behind on any recommended vaccines, and check with your healthcare provider for specific recommendations tailored to your health needs. What vaccines you need and when. Influenza. Flu. Who should get it? Everyone. How often? Every year. Notes, the flu vaccine changes every year as scientists try to anticipate which strains of the flu virus will be most prevalent. A special high-dose vaccine for people age 65 and older helps their immune systems respond more vigorously. COVID-19. Who should get it? Everyone. How often? Depends. Notes, everyone should have the newest version of the Pfizer-BioNTech or the Moderna vaccine, which both came out in fall 2023. Some people, such as adults over age 65 and immunocompromised individuals, may need additional doses. New versions of the vaccine may be released as the virus continues to mutate. Ask your doctor or look for public health announcements to keep current. Varicella, chickenpox, and shingles. Who should get it? People born in 1980 or later, plus older individuals who have additional risk factors and were not previously vaccinated and have never had chickenpox. How often? Once. The vaccine requires two doses given 4 to 8 weeks apart. Tdap, tetanus, diphtheria, pertussis. Who should get it? Everyone. How often? Every 10 years. Notes, if you step on a nail or get another wound and aren't sure when you had your last booster, get another one. Women should get a booster shot with every pregnancy. MMR, measles, mumps, rubella. Who should get it? People born in 1957 or later who have not been fully immunized. How often? One or two doses provide lifelong immunity. Most people are fully immunized in childhood. HPV, human papillomavirus. Who should get it? Adults through age 26, or if not vaccinated by age 27, then before age 46, in consultation with your doctor. How often? Two or three doses, depending on age and health factors. Note, young people between ages 9 and 14 receive two doses, adults receive three. Zoster, shingles. Who should get it? Adults aged 50 and over, plus younger adults with immunocompromising conditions. How often? Once. The vaccine, Shingrix, requires two doses given 2 to 6 months apart. Pneumococcal, pneumonia. Who should get it? Adults over age 65, plus younger people with additional risk factors such as diabetes, lymphoma, cigarette smoking, and more. How often? One dose of PCV20 vaccine or one dose of PCV15 vaccine followed by a dose of PPSV23. From the AARP Bulletin, October 2024, get your vaccinations up to date pronto. Vaccination is still paramount for preventing COVID and decreasing the risk of severe illness and death. Updated 2024-25 COVID vaccinations from Moderna, Novavax, and Pfizer are expected to roll out now. Medicare Part B continues to cover the vaccine, as do most insurers, but it's best to check in advance. Some insurers only cover the vaccine when it's administered in-network. And yes, it's safe to get your flu shot at the same time. I ran out of time for this week's Vision News. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast as our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, please call 911.